Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studio. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to it. It is what we like to call Fri-yay. We got a special sound effect for that one, so hit it, man. Fri-yay! Indeed, you have made it all the way to the end of the week, and we are headed into the weekend with some gorgeous, gorgeous weather, like unseasonably warm and yet not blistering and beautiful outside. The leaves changing color anyway, and JP's on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing good. You know, yesterday during the show, John Paul texted in that I needed to do a sound effect, so I jacked that all the way up and did the poof. So there you go.
It works.
It's loud.
All right. Hey, by the way, thank you and Emily for handling the show yesterday.
No problem. Hope all the viewers enjoyed it.
I feel certain they did, and they're back for more. So, yeah, thank you, JP. Mm-hmm. All right, listen, we got a great show laid on for you today. Coming up at 3 o'clock today, our friend Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute is calling in related to a new report they've just put out on Medicaid spending. It falls in line with the whole First Dipper I'm doing about spending in general. Government's out of control, and I don't mean like a little bit. Like, there are folks saying, you know, alarm bells should be sounding. Entitled spending, we're going to talk about all that, but Stephanie Smith is calling in at 3 o'clock. At 3:30, we didn't get to do Butters and Lee yesterday. We're technically not doing Butters and Lee today because Butters is now gone to a family wedding. And so we're going to do a round of JP and Lee. So I got the questions and answers ready to roll. We'll see how they do. It's going to be JP and Lee today at 3:30. But then not to be outdone by having Lee as his partner for a bit, JP is by himself at 4 o'clock for JP on sports. Keep in mind, he has his own sports show on Saturday mornings on the UMP in Huntsville. And so, yeah, we'll get a preview of JP on sports at 4 o'clock. And then at 4:30, you're going to have a few minutes with a guy named Dave Robertson who's calling in. So tomorrow, I'm really proud to be a part of the Antique Automobile Club of America's Southern National Car Show in Huntsville. And I'll be emceeing their banquet that night. But Dave Robertson from the event's going to be here to give us a heads up on that. It's a big, big deal, y'all. If you're car people, you may want to get out there to the Orion Amphitheater parking lot tomorrow. It's going to be cool. So, yeah, that's at 4:30. And then I still got a triple dipper. How do I get all this in one show? Hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. Coming out the gate in conjunction with that conversation with Stephanie Smith, we're going to talk about entitled spending. Entitled spending. First of all, they spend a whole lot on entitlements. Did you know that literally one-third of the state budget is spent on just entitlements? Yeah, it's true. Entitled spending at the federal level is even worse. But it's almost as if politicians themselves feel entitled to the spending. We got to get it under control. We'll talk about it. Number one, triple dipper, entitled spending. Number two, fighting back. I love it when I find stories about people looking at wokeism and liberalism and progressivism and saying, you know what, enough of that, and either filing suit or standing up or speaking out or something. Well, I got several examples. We'll talk about that. Number two, triple dipper, fighting back. And then number three, I mean, it just, where does it end? Transmania. That's what I'm doing. The transgender agenda and what they're doing to our kids is really gross. And when you find out that they know it's bad and they're hiding the information because they don't want it to get out because they want to pursue it anyway, then you know it's an agenda. It's not medicine. Not that we couldn't figure that out anyway, but that's where we are. We're going to talk about that. Transmania number three on the Triple Dipper. Well, all right, let me jump on into today's opening monologue, The Right Side Way. I don't know if you heard it, but buried in all the rhetoric and 24/7 news coverage about the election and everything else, there's actually a pretty important trial underway right now in New York. A trial that just began this week. A trial to determine whether or not a good Samaritan is a bad man. A guy named Daniel Penny, you've probably heard of him. You may remember he's a former Marine. He was on a New York subway when a violent, mentally disturbed homeless man began threatening passengers in his train car. The actual criminal, the one I'm talking about, was named Jordan Neely. He had over 40 arrests on his record. He was fresh out of the Rikers Island Detention Center for punching an old woman in the face for no reason and breaking her nose. He habitually got on the subway and harassed subway riders. And that fateful day in May of 2023, Daniel Penny and others heard him yelling that somebody on the train was going to die. Penny, the former Marine, he intervened. He took Neely down, along with the help of several others. And Penny held him in a chokehold until the police arrived, again with the help of other passengers. But Neely died. Penny's now on trial for manslaughter and criminally negligent homicide. Postmortem toxicology, though, indicates that Neely had strong narcotics in his system that may well have caused his death. We don't know. During that time frame, 27 people were murdered on the New York subways. It's been so bad that Liberal Governor Kathy Hochul actually deployed the National Guard to New York subway stations. But yet the Soros-backed DA won't let go of the case. You know who it is? None other than Alvin Bragg. So the trial began this week. It's expected to last for over a month, maybe up to 6 weeks. A month? The Good Samaritan, the former Marine who saved lives and intervened with the help of others, not by himself, is on trial. The justice system has been turned on its head. But you may also recall the story from 2023 when two employees of a Lululemon store in Atlanta lost their jobs because they dared to report a robbery. First of all, I don't know what a Lululemon is. I hope those clothes are just for women because I may have to question the manhood of any man who wears something branded Lululemon. We'll hold off on that for right now. But here's the story as we know it. Two employees of a Lululemon store in Peachtree Corners were terminated. Why? Because they confronted two young thugs who were wearing hoodies and face masks. They were brazenly loading up their arms with merchandise and walking out the door with it in broad daylight. It was apparently, by the way, not the first time this had happened. We've all seen videos of criminals treating retail stores like a cheap buffet and loading up on what they want and walking out with impunity. And so what did these two women do? They simply yelled at them to stop. They videoed the thieves in the act, and they called 911, and they were terminated. They were terminated because apparently Lululemon has a zero-tolerance policy for intervention. That's intervention? Look, there was a time when zero tolerance was against the ones committing the crime, not the ones pointing out the crime. I mean, to be honest, there's still places in this country where no one would be allowed to walk out with a pack of bubblegum without facing some serious street justice, much less an armful of clothes. But in liberal bastions around this country, there's been a shift in the dynamic. A shift, disturbingly, toward victimizing the victims, polarizing the police, and mollycoddling the criminals. So, what is it about liberals that makes them averse to law enforcement? I don't know if you saw it, but Burlington, Vermont right now is having such buyer's remorse over the fact that they defunded police. In fact, their city council just said that they made a mistake and they are now desperate to find 20 new law enforcement officers to put on the streets. They need it because Burlington's overrun right now with drug use and homelessness. I'm sure, by the way, it's not all liberals, though. I don't know of any conservatives, though, that are adverse to law enforcement. Now that I think about it, the whole defund the police movement is rooted in the vast misconception or the outright lie that having fewer police officers on the beat means that our society will be more fair, equitable, less racist, whatever. That does sound liberal, doesn't it? But anyone who's been on the wrong side of a criminal act as a victim knows that if you don't have the means to actually enforce the laws with men and women who are called and trained and equipped to protect and defend, to form that thin blue line between order and disorder, that if we don't have the men and women in blue, then all we get is anarchy and grief and suffering. Criminals don't obey laws. That's the very essence of what it means to be a criminal. What stops bad guys from doing bad things is good guys willing to do good things. And that's not hyperbole. That's just common sense. Lululemon, they're a private entity. Knuckleheads run it, but it's still private. I can't change their policies. They just are. But what about, though, when government is abdicating its authority to pursue criminals? Look, one of the primary functions of governance is to provide security to its citizens, and that's not always happening these days. Perhaps a prime example of how to screw up a beautiful community is the city of Chicago, the Windy City, the city of the big shoulders, one of the greatest cities on the face of the earth. It's being run into the ground right now by liberal policies, which include an aversion to actual law enforcement. This past Memorial Day weekend, of 2023, was one of the deadliest on record in Chicago. By the Monday of that Memorial Day weekend, 11 people had been killed and 38 wounded in Chicago streets in one weekend. And Chicago, like many bastions of liberal governance, they're losing population as people are fleeing high taxes, corruption, poor schools, unsafe streets. Sounds a lot like Birmingham, Alabama, to be honest. So between Democrat Governor J.B. Pritzker and Democrat Mayor Brandon Johnson, you would think that they would, I don't know, combine to form a plan, right? I would hope to hear that the plan would include things like additional law enforcement with arrest authority and the backing of the local force for assistance as needed. The ability to actually apply years of quality training and commitment to apprehend, arrest, and detain criminals that we give to our law enforcement so they can do the jobs on our streets. But the Chicago police force is severely depleted. So no, that's not the liberal way. So what did they do? Well, last year they were very proud to announce, with the help of the governor's office and the support of the police skeptical new mayor, they deployed 30 so-called peacekeepers into Chicago streets. People wearing yellow vests whose function was to provide so-called essential assistance in de-escalation, conflict resolution, and crisis support. Wow. 30 vest-wearing do-gooders in a city of 2.75 million. That ought to do it. So how'd that work out? Well, aside from the escalated deaths and injuries that I told you about a moment ago, those peacekeepers haven't panned out quite the way they would have hoped. In fact, one of them last year was arrested for robbing and beating a man while wearing his yellow peacekeeper vest. You can't make this stuff up. Townhall.com filed a report on this. They said a Chicago man wearing a neon yellow peacekeeper's vest helped a group of people to beat and rob a motorist in Little Village. What? The allegations came after city and state officials had lauded the use of peacekeepers as a tool they would deploy over Memorial Day weekend to tamp down violence. The guy's name was Oscar Montez. CPD surveillance officers, they reported that a group of people pulled a man out of the car and started beating him, one of whom was wearing a bright yellow vest. Oh, yes, it was Montez, the peacekeeper. Montez, by the way, is actually on parole for a 2012 case in which he pleaded guilty to aggravated discharge of a firearm. Does that sound like a peacekeeper to you? Okay, I know he was one guy out of the 30, right? But let's be honest, he wasn't vetted, he wasn't trained, he wasn't trustworthy, he had no accountability. So what stock should we put in the other 29 so-called peacekeepers who likely went through the same lack of recruiting and vetting effort? See, the bottom line is this. Since the inception of this great nation, we have always had the ability to put good law enforcement officers on the streets of our cities and towns. It's an honorable and much-needed profession. People who are inclined to commit crimes, they are not likely to respond favorably to kind words or sensitivity training. People in yellow vests asking them to please be nice. They need to know that the true blue is able to back up their words with actions. And at Right Side Radio, we back the blue, the true blue, not some fake rendition of community action, the true blue. We have also always been a nation that was filled with good Samaritans. People who did not take kindly to others threatening their friends, co-workers, or associates. Who would not sit still and allow people to be accosted without stepping in. If we're going to be a strong nation, then we cannot punish the good and vilify the police. It doesn't work that way. That's a formula for anarchy. We need to back the blue, and we need to do the good. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, Daniel Penny's on trial right now. That's a horrible thing. They're picking the jury today, I believe. But he's on trial right now for stepping in, and God knows what that guy would have done. Here's somebody who just got out of jail for assault. 40 arrests on his record. He's obviously mentally disturbed. He's threatening to kill someone. Daniel Penny steps in. The guy dies. Toxicology says he's full of drugs. But Penny's the one whose life has been turned upside down. If we had a DA who cared about people and not just liberal, progressive, Soros-backed action, it might be a different story. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Back the blue. Do the good. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Yeah, I mean, saving the world one soundbite at a time. That's what we're about here. Hey, so keep your eyes on this Daniel Penny trial. I'm just really anxious to see how this thing's going to work out. Alvin Bragg is such a ne'er-do-well. I mean, that guy is just a piece of work. But Daniel Penny is on trial right now in New York City for potentially saving lives. But anyway, we'll see how this goes. JP, do you own some Lululemons? Do you?
I have to admit, I have to admit, I have one pair of Lululemon shorts. It was given to me as a Christmas present by my sister, and it was the one of the athletic shorts that has like the underwear like built into the shorts, and they are the most comfortable shorts I own. So, you know, I'll wear them for the comfortability, but you know, maybe not because they're Lululemons, but they're just that comfortable.
But could they have given like the male version of their clothing line a different name, like I don't know, JoJo Lemon or something?
Not the Lululemon, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so although maybe I don't support everything the company does, they make comfortable shorts. So
my buddy Stan just texted in, and he says. He says, Lulu's all I'll buy and wear anymore. I know he's joking because I know that's not true. But I gave him the big like laughing emoji. He said, but I'm sure it's run by commies.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Whatever. All right. Text lines are open, by the way. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. I have had the opportunity to be out and about really enjoying it. I got more to come. So, last night I was in Tuscaloosa, hence the fact that JP and Emily did the show for me. Thank y'all both again very much for doing that. Got down to Tuscaloosa by some time. I mean, it's a two-hour drive from where we are. So time I got there, doing good. Spoke to the Tuscaloosa Republicans last night. This morning went up to Huntsville, the Military Order of the World Wars, which is, you know, one of those organizations like the VFW and others. But they sponsor a program for kids. And so I spoke to about 80 high school kids at a youth leadership symposium in Huntsville. Great time with them. Really appreciated them having me up. Tomorrow, I'm stoked because I'm going to be out at the Antique Automobile Club of Association, Club of America. I can't ever say it.
It's a word salad, but it's cool.
The AACA Southern Nationals car show tomorrow, and I'm the MC for their banquet tomorrow night in Huntsville at the Space and Rocket Center. And then I'm speaking as the MC for Eagle Forum of Alabama's dinner on Tuesday. So, wow, I'm getting to see people all over the place, but loving it a lot. It's a good thing I got people like you to run things when I'm having to run around the state and do stuff. But thank you very much. All right, we're taking a break. I'm coming right back. Text lines open, 833-687-4448. I got a few more of those to catch up on, and then we will dive into Dipper number one, entitled Spending. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Beautiful state in the nation. This one I am talking about, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Text lines, got to go to it. I got some new textures in there, too. John John from Miner says, awesome shirt, Phil. Thank you. Thank you, John John. I'm for those of y'all that watch on live stream, I'm just chilling today. I had my fancy go-to-church kind of clothes on this morning, and I decided to get comfortable and dress for radio. So I'm just sitting here wearing my Captain America t-shirt. But thank you, John John. John from Brownsboro says, don't forget that New York took over 6 months to change their subway schedule to sanitize the trains and cars regularly during the pandemic. Wow. New York. I love that city, and yet, wow. Jeff from Indiana. You know, Phil, I don't support vigilanteism, but that's what's going to boil down to when these DAs and judges and cops can't or won't perform their duties, and that's why I'm in favor of constitutional carry so you can protect yourself from these criminals when they confront. And if these unconstitutional laws in blue cities are left standing, then they get what they get. Yeah, I really do. So, Jeff, you make a great point. Lawlessness creates two things. Lawlessness creates anarchy, or it creates vigilanteism. You hardly ever have anything in between. So, more to come. But I'd prefer that we get back to letting the men and women in blue do what they do. John from Huntsville says, JP just received a 10-point deduction for his embarrassing confession about Lululemons.
Listen, I'm comfortable with my masculinity. It's okay.
I feel confident that's true. He also said, Phil, magnificent monologue, welcome back. Also, did you hear that at least 75 people in 13 states have become sick over an E. coli outbreak linked to McDonald's? I did hear that. Says, by the way, JP, did you hear the average ticket price of this year's World Series is $5,000? Just to let you know that explosion sound effect you played yesterday was really loud. I had my radio phone turned all the way up.
Sorry about that. But the World Series ticket prices don't surprise me one bit.
Where is it opening tonight?
I actually don't know. That's a good question. I have to look into that. But yeah, when the Braves played, they played in the World Series in 21 for the first time, and however long, the ticket prices were like, I think, close to 10,000 to 15,000. Some of them.
That's nuts. That just, you know what, you can go ahead and go buy you a couple of big screen TVs and watch it for that.
So tonight opens up in L.A., so it's probably contributes to it.
Lisa from Huntsville says, just in case you wanted to try anything, Lululemon, unclaimed baggage in Scottsboro has a bunch of it at a good price, LOL. I've been to Unclaimed Baggage in a long time. You ever been there?
Nope, never been there.
Unclaimed Baggage is a cool place, so it's a great we need to contact them and just listen, somebody had the bright idea that all this unclaimed baggage at airports, no one's ever going to claim it. What do you do with it? You sell it in the most epic fashion. I've got some good stuff there.
Wow. I've never even heard of that.
So apparently Lululemons are being sold there. Says, my husband has a couple of Lululemon things too. He loves them. They are quite comfortable. However, I do agree they would have never given their – they should have given their men's line a different name.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. JoJo Apples or something. Lululemons and JoJo Apples. Roy from Hartsell says, if the underwear is built into the shorts, he's wearing what used to be known as swim trunks.
But they're much more comfortable.
You're facing all kinds of grief over this.
They don't got that the weird lining in them. They got, actually good lining in them.
Tim from Madison says, listen to what you shared about Chicago brings a certain scripture to mind. Romans 1:28-32 seems to apply far too often. I'll have to go check it out and see which one we're talking about there. Vince from Hazel Green is brand spanking new in the text line. Says, please do not call the submission hold used by Daniel Penny a chokehold. Chokeholds compress the windpipe, cutting off oxygen. A submission hold compresses the arteries, leading to the brain cutting off oxygen. Okay, Vince, thanks. Next is Jim from Selligent says, hello, Mr. Phil. You have any thoughts about the current replacement of the police chief in Birmingham, Alabama? Yeah, get one who will actually lead well and enforce the law. There's a great idea.
And then on top of that, get a mayor that will actually support him.
Yeah, and get somebody who will not just answer to the agenda items of the liberal mayor. That would be great. So as for a name, I got a couple of people down there. I won't try to poison the well by saying who I really appreciate and think they would do an amazing job. But right now, what I really want is the kind of person, which is not going to be a DEI hire, not going to be a liberal, not going to be a kowtower to the liberal mayor. Go in there, lead the troops, inspire them, go out on the front lines with your men and women, and enforce the law. That's what we need, absolutely need. All right, listen, that's a lot. You guys are some texting machines. Let's talk about spending for a minute. Oh, Lord, yes, we are. We're going there. There's an article on WokeSpy came out yesterday. It says, is the Biden-Harris administration handing Trump a live economic grenade? It's an interesting piece. It points out that right now, as we speak, today, the S&P 500 is up. We're looking at some gains we haven't seen in years. And they're calling it a market melt-up. Interesting. A market melt-up, meaning we may have a slightly overjuiced economy right now. Meaning that we've got government spending and a surge in public sector jobs. Public sector jobs are never the same. I mean, they're jobs. You get it. The jobs report gets to show those. But if you break it out and say, where's the private sector? Where's the farm jobs? And where's the public sector? If it's just public sector jobs you're relying on to increase your numbers, then all you're doing is creating the self-licking ice cream cone. That's government getting the benefit of what government created for its own benefit. But right now, what they're saying in this article is we need to keep a clear eye on the economy and on the economic indicators. Bloomberg this year, recently, this week, by the way, indicated that there are some things that say that a Trump victory is in the making, but that it also may be that Trump's going to be taking the economy at a time when it's going to be fragile, more fragile than it looks. So as we take that into account, let's take a look at an article on Red State. Red State, this article came out 3 days ago. Headline, catastrophe, U.S. national debt's unbelievable spike in the last 3 weeks. In the last 3 weeks, The U.S. debt jumped by another $473 billion in 3 weeks. And the article points out, it's written by a guy named Ward Clark, who's an economist. He says it's hard to see a way back. This six figures of debt for every American man, woman, and child, no matter what age or gender. Every man, woman, and child basically has a piece of this debt, to the extent that it would be six figures. If every one of us had the ability to stroke a check, every American of every age would have to write a check in the six figures to reduce the debt. And he points out there's three ways out of this mess. Just three. And I agree. And I'm not an economist. I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But listen, he says we can repudiate the debt, which means we can say, yeah, we're defaulting. Sorry, all y'all. We're just not going to pay off those bonds. We're not going to do those things. We're not going to answer up for that. We can repudiate it, but he also points out would send the global economy into a tailspin. And then we have to, like, overinflate the economy, drive things to a different direction to try and change our worthless dollar. People will get away from the dollar as the currency of choice. So it's not likely that we're going to repudiate that debt in a standard non-war environment. What's next? Well, we could try to grow our way out of it. Wouldn't that be awesome? That also means you have to have a government with pro-growth policies, and they're going to reduce regulation to allow the private sector to increase, because the public sector does not feed the government. The public sector exists off the private sector. So we have to grow the private sector. We have to grow the economy. But that means you have to have a pro-growth mentality in the executive branch especially. But none of these tactics, he points out, are going to work unless we stop the runaway spending. Stopping runaway spending is exactly where we have to go first. I'm going to rephrase that. Stopping government or stymieing government spending while also curbing government regulation that stifles the private sector has to be the collaborative plan. He points out there's agencies out there that are not constitutionally mandated that are sucking down some dollars. The EPA, the Department of Education, the Department of Energy, AmeriCorps, the Department of Labor, Department of Commerce, the IRS. These are not constitutionally mandated. Now, there may be some form of governance that could require their services, but they've also become bloated, and they suck down an incredible amount of money. So if you want to curb spending, maybe you start with the government itself. Wouldn't that be novel? That'd be ideal. But then there's the third rail of politics. There's that thing that nobody wants to talk about. It's called entitlement spending. When I was in Montgomery, I will just tell you this. States have budgets just like the federal government does. In Alabama, we are blessed with the fact that our state constitution requires us to pass a balanced budget every year. Now, what the Democrats did for years was they would pass a budget that was notional at best, and then halfway through the year, the governor would have to do what's called announce proration, meaning curbing's like cutting the budget in mid-year. That throws everything into crisis. But when you do that, it just basically means your budget was never truly balanced to begin with. That being said, you've not seen proration in the, 13 years since Republicans took over the supermajority in Alabama. But what you're also not seeing, though, is a true curbing of spending. Government spending in Montgomery has gotten pretty bad as well. Luckily, we've had revenue and we've had some one-time monies to plug the holes. But what people don't often realize is even at the state level in Alabama, y'all, entitlements, Medicaid, food stamps, those kind of things, Medicaid alone takes almost 29% of our general fund budget. That's madness. So you have two kinds of spending. You have fixed spending and you have discretionary spending. And all we were able to do down in Montgomery was pass a budget that was related to discretionary spending, meaning we could move it here, move it there. And even then we were stymied. We are one of the most earmarked states in the nation. We're also one of only two or three states in the nation that has what you call a split budget. Everything education has been sequestered off to one side, and everything else it takes to run the state, like roads, bridges, courts, mental health, veterans affairs, Medicaid, prisons, all of that is in one other budget called the general fund. And the general fund is always woefully behind the education budget, because the teachers union years ago in its years of power made sure that all of the growth revenues just feed the education budget. We made some corrections to that, but the general fund still sucks wind every year. And a big part of that is because Medicaid by itself consumes 29% of that budget. And that is, we call it discretionary, but it's really not. Because once it's there, it's just there. And you have to spend it in order to keep up a program that is just getting bigger by the day. However, Democrats are determined to make it even bigger. Democrats are calling for expansion of Medicaid. Now, I'm going to take a break right now. When I get back, we're going to talk about what expansion of Medicaid means. People think, oh, that means you're offering more services. No, it doesn't. It's not what it means at all. Medicaid expansion. Can we afford it? Doesn't the government pay for it? Oh, it's not free. Ain't no free lunch. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. I got somebody held on during the break, so let me grab that real quick and honor their time. Mike from Huntsville. Hey, Mike, how you doing? Did we lose him? Mike from Huntsville? We lost him. Mike, call back in if you want to. I apologize. It looks like either we lost you or you lost us, one or the other. I know he's calling about the debt. Let me do this. So Medicaid expansion. So here's the thing. Medicaid expansion. What does that mean? A lot of times when you hear that, that means we're going to offer more things. No, we're not. It means we're going to take more people. That's what it is. Medicaid expansion is mean expanding who's allowed to take part in the program. And that is a recipe for huge spending. What we're basically saying when we do that is we're not going to just, you know, sit idly by and you know, spend fiscally responsibly. We're gonna go ahead and open it up and say, just Pandora's boxes, y'all come. Who wants some? We'll pay for it. And when we do that, good Lord, when we do that, it just, the Alabama Policy Institute did a new report. And I used to work at API myself. I used to also chair the Committee on Fiscal Responsibility in the Alabama State Senate. And I can just tell you, I know for a fact that anybody who says to you, the federal government will pay for it. Well, first of all, where does the federal government get its money? But then aside from that, does that mean the state's never going to have to pay? Oh, no, no. The federal government pays for it for a period of time, and then the state picks up the tab. And then all of a sudden, we're spending $200 to $300 million more a year sustaining something. Right now, already 25% of the state of Alabama is on some form of Medicaid. That's huge. More to come on that. I think Mike's back on the line. Let me try it real quick. Mike from Huntsville, how you doing?
I'm good, Phil. Listen, first you have to get rid of the entitlements regarding illegal aliens. I mean, that's literally billions of dollars. Then if you go back, you have to understand how the Federal Reserve operates. You need to abolish the Federal Reserve, put the United States Treasury back in charge of the money, because the Federal Reserve is the biggest interest holder on U.S. debt. Because they get the money that's Bureau Printing Engraving gets. They get the money for free, except on a 6% perpetuity bond they never pay. They pay 2 cents a bill irrespective of denomination. By returning the face value of a $100 bill, they can buy like 1,000 $100 bills made by the Bureau Printing Engraving. The actual Federal Reserve is a private corporation. The way you get stock in it, and I learned this, I've seen the asset sheets from the trial we had in Memphis, Tennessee, that went on for a year. And they've done this for years and years. It's the biggest money laundering operation in the world, possibly second by the IMF. And
Mike, your point is well taken. I mean, and one of the first things you said was there's an aspect of spending that should be fully discretionary and able to be revoked, which is spending all these entitlements on illegals. I mean, why would we do that? But we do it to ourselves. And then the other thing you're talking about is absolutely, we have gaffes in our system that allow the system to be gamed by politics And all it does is drive up the national debt as if they could really entitlement spending. It in my opinion is about the entitlements, but it's also about the entitled nature of politicians who keep spending, and that's also got to be curbed. Mike, I got to wind it up. So if you got about 10 seconds there, go ahead.
Sure. What you got to do, you have to understand how the entire, well, they do QE2, they double down. The Federal Reserve gets double the interest. It's the most insane thing you've ever seen in your life. Because when they did QE2, QE1, QE3, all that was the Treasury, the actual Treasury issuing Treasury bills to the Federal Reserve that they use the same money to buy back they already got interest on in the first place. Right. Anyway, that's it.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you holding on during the break. I can tell he's steeped in the topic. But the reality is this, you guys. Entitlement spending, politicians don't like to talk about it. But there's a growing trend right now to have to talk about it. Why? Because we're looking at right now, we're hearing story here on Fox, Dateline April 1st of this year, that as early as 2028, Medicare may become insolvent. You're talking 4 years from now. Social Security, the year 2033. I hate the phrase kick the can down the road. I hate that phrase. However, that is too often a best descriptor of what is happening. They're going to have to get in place some austerity measures that square away the programs. I am not talking about doing away with Medicare. I am not talking about doing away with Social Security. Not at all. But the idea that we're going to sit here and do nothing when the private sector wouldn't run a business like that, at some point you have to recognize the danger of insolvency is more of a danger than the idea of having a hard conversation like a big family. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about that Medicaid spending with Stephanie Smith from the Alabama Policy Institute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on a Friday. We're going to go to the phones right now. Stephanie Smith is the president of the Alabama Policy Institute. And if you're not familiar with API, you should be. API is a great organization that focuses on state policy issues here in Alabama, conservative policy positions on things like free markets and strong families and literally standing on core principle values of conservatism. So that being said, they just came out with a report about the sort of the fallacy, if you will, that Medicaid expansion is this most wonderful thing that will save the economy? Not really. Stephanie Smith's on the phone right now. Stephanie Smith, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on to talk about Medicaid expansion, which is something that we've been talking about on and off for decades.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say, decades.
Yeah. I mean, your time working in the governor's office and everything else, it was probably a topic back then too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, you know, especially as a younger staffer at that time, which was a long time ago, you know, there are several issues that we continue to talk about and bat around. This is one of them. Gambling is one of them. They're kind of the zombie issues of Alabama.
Yes. Yes, they are. Well, so Medicaid expansion, I have distinct memories because, you know, Obamacare became all the thing about the time I was taking office myself in the state Senate. And all the calls for Medicaid expansion. We are one of the few states, what, like 10, I believe, that have not chosen to enter into the Obamacare version of expansion. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, that's right. So we have, it's kind of confusing. We have Medicaid in the state of Alabama, but we have not signed on to the federal full expansion of Medicaid. So we have a Medicaid program. 1.1 million people in the state of Alabama are in the Alabama Medicaid program. That's about a little over 20% of the state that has their medical bills paid for by Medicaid. And I think that that's one of the distinctions that people get confused about. We're not talking about access necessarily to care. We're not talking about having people be denied at an emergency room because they don't have insurance. There are already laws in place about that. What
right.
we're really talking about is who's going to pay the bill after you have some sort of medical care. And so there are already that 1.1 million in the state that are part of the Medicaid program. What the expansion is talking about is expanding under the Affordable Care Act, which we call Obamacare. And he said he liked it too, so let's go with it. Obamacare. It's basically the Southeast plus a few other states that have Texas, I think Michigan, just a few other states that have not, quote, you know, signed on to a full Medicaid expansion. Well, I think that this is one of those things that Alabama has actually done right in holding the line.
Right.
And the reason I think that is not because, you know, I don't want people to have health care or medical care. The reason is because the costs are absolutely skyrocketing and yes. astronomical, and they keep going up. And so a lot of the states that have done either a full expansion or have tried this public-private partnership idea that has been batted around in the last year or so in Alabama are actually backing up and trying to undo what they have done because it's completely eating their state budgets alive.
Well, right now, even without the expansion, we're looking at like almost, not quite, like 29%, I believe, 28% of Alabama's general fund budget is Medicaid. Am I right?
That's right. That's right. So it's about, so it's about between $800 and $900 million a year current day. If we expanded it, it would be another 230, 240, something like that annually in addition. And so, you know, the general fund budget, you know, Alabama has two different budgets, the education side and the general fund side. The general fund is basically everything except education. And so, you know, to eat up 30, 40, 50, 60% of that general fund budget is not going to work.
No.
It's not a sustainable idea. And so you have to think about the other things that are in that general fund budget that we have to have, like law enforcement and prisons and roads and, you know, basically every other function of government that's not public school related is in the general fund. And so at some point, if there's full Medicaid expansion, those costs will increase. The trajectory is clear. Other states have been dealing with it and trying to back up. The general fund will eat itself, basically. So, I mean, there'll be no more money in the general fund. The general fund is funded by basically stagnant types of taxes.
Yeah.
It's not the income tax. Or the sales tax that fund those. That's what funds the education fund. So you have slow growth taxes feeding into this pot of money, and then you would be adding a huge catalyst of spending on the other side. So the budget reasons are reason enough, in my opinion, to be against Medicaid expansion. But then there are other considerations, and that is, the list of people who are already covered by our Medicaid program are really kind of the people that you would think need to be covered,
right,
you know, under the Medicaid program. It's mothers, children, full-time caregivers, people who live in nursing homes, people who are disabled, anyone who is elderly. So kind of the list of people who would need aid for medical purposes, for paying those bills, are already in the system. The gap of people that are outside of the system right now, there are some working poor people who have a hard time getting on state Medicaid, but that's what Obamacare was supposed to be for. And then also a lot of people who are not working at all. You know, we have a labor force participation rate that is abysmal. You know, we have just over half of Alabamians working on a daily basis. And this type of expansion of a program like this would actually disincentivize work.
Yeah, basically you're paying people in a sense to stay home at that point.
Well, that's exactly right, because there's also this idea, okay, well, we'll expand the program. And anybody who wants to work, even a part-time job, but definitely a full-time job, anybody who wants to apply for work or work, they would be eligible for this program. Well, the Biden-Harris administration says, no, 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 you can't put those strings on it. You can't make people work. You actually get bumped off of the program, or we won't even allow you to put that into your program if you have work requirements as an accountability measure. They rejected Arkansas's last year. They've rejected Georgia's, North Carolina's. And so if we end up with a Harris administration, there's no question in my mind that they would not allow work requirements.
Yeah, what you're
so
saying
it's actually
basically
paying people not to work.
What you're saying basically is, aside from paying people not to work, it's as if they want to grow a dependency mentality.
Oh, 100%. That, I mean, there's no other reason that you would disincentivize people seeking the job if they just have different goals. The goal is not to have people working, it's to have dependent people.
Well, Steph, let me ask you this real quick before, because I do want to change topics on you before we run out of time in just a minute. But one of the things that you always hear, and the Democrats called for it all the time, the federal government will pick up the tab. The federal government will pick up the tab. And first of all, my counterpoint was always first, well, where do you think the federal government gets its money? But then,
that's right.
But then secondly, the federal government's picking up the tab for a portion for a while for the match and for the plus up, and then that fades away and we're stuck with the bill.
Yeah, it's basically like a balloon loan.
It's a bait and switch.
And so you sign on to something and then you know it's going to grow later, but you don't know how you're going to pay for it later. Even just the federal portion, I mean, the state portion of the federal expansion would be $300 million a year for the state, much less, you know, as they shift that percentage from the federal government to the state government as far as who's holding the bag. So it's just an unsustainable program, and you're signing the state up for something that you know is going to bankrupt one of your major funding sources in the state that pays for what we actually need in state government. So it's ill-advised from several different directions, and really we just can't afford it.
I got to ask you, as you guys put your finger on the pulse of things in Montgomery, are you hearing any softening of Republicans towards the idea of this expansion? Is there a discussion about that actually happening?
There was some discussion last year, comparison of this Arkansas public-private partnership model, which is why we focused on that during our, in our report and in some of our information, because it's a failure. It's a failure in Arkansas right now. They're trying to get out of it. The costs have been so high, and they underestimated how many people would be in the program, and they also underestimated costs, so it's bankrupting their budget right now. So they're trying to get out of it. So there was some talk about it last year. Yeah, it's one of those things, if you rename something that sounds better, then people get confused or may sign on to it. But keep in mind, you have to have a full sign-off federal expansion before you could have a public-private partnership put in place. So there's no public-private partnership instead of Medicaid expansion.
Well,
that
guess,
is Medicaid expansion.
I guess the last question on this is there's always been this kind of tension in Montgomery about if the legislature won't do it, the governor could just do it by herself through an executive order. Is there any indication that Ivy, being a lame duck and basically heading to the House and not caring, could she do that? Do you see that happening?
I do not see that happening, which is a breath of fresh air. The conversations that I've had with her staff, she is saying almost the exact same thing that we're saying at API, which is it's an unsustainable program, and it would tie us to something that we would not be able to pay the bill for in the long run. So it's irresponsible. Which is very, very good news to hear.
Good to hear. I tell you what, we ran all the way to the end of this segment on that. Do you have the ability to hang on during a break and come back and talk about something separate? I want to talk to you about
absolutely.
The state health officer, Scott Harris, not one of my favorite people. There's a new story out about him today. All right, great. We'll do that. We'll take a break right now. We're on the line right now with Stephanie Smith, president of the Alabama Policy Institute. We'll come back from that. There's a new story out on 1819 News today that our illustrious state health officer, Scott Harris, who shut things down during COVID, is now the president of a new George Soros-linked organization. Ah, boy. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're going right back to the phones right now. Stephanie Smith is the president of the Alabama Policy Institute, a conservative organization that's been around now for 35 years, just had their 35th anniversary a few weeks ago, founded originally by who is now Congressman Gary Palmer. I was proud to serve on staff there for several years, and the reality is they do great work at tracking down conservative policy issues and giving you the deep dive figures on it. Hey, Steph, I want to change subjects. A story came out today that kind of caught me off guard. You and I have both been supportive of changing things related to our state health officer. Scott Harris is the guy who has held the position now. During COVID, he's the reason why things were getting shut down. Go figure, no one even realized that he had the authority but he also had a position that the governor didn't control. And now he's got a new position. What do you know about that?
Yeah, he, so Scott Harris, you know, your listeners probably already know, but would recall he was kind of the one in the mask standing next to Kay Ivey at all of the, all of the 27 times they declared a state of emergency and kept our churches and schools closed for so long during COVID. And he's done a few things since then as well that have kind of, you know, put him on the hot seat. The most recent one is that he's been named president of the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. That sounds really boring, but the interesting thing about that is that that group purports to focus on health equity and anti-racism. And anti-racism, if your listeners have never really heard that term, that sounds good, but actually anti-racism means you must be racist now toward people in order to correct for racism in the past. And then health equity, you know, could also sound good, but health equity means outcomes. And so health equity thought processes have been used to actually create racial quotas, you know, from all the way from, you know, who gets into medical school to who gets treated first in an emergency room. And, you know, kind of the idea from, you know, the latest hurricane that, you know, Kamala Harris came out with the idea several years ago that, you know, those in disadvantaged or historically disadvantaged communities or, you know, types of people should be helped first in a in an emergency. That's what this kind of group actually teaches and promotes, which is people in historically disadvantaged bodies should be cared for first. And that is not, that's an anti-American principle.
Well, it is. And that's actually that type of DEI principle in terms of providing necessary care. FEMA actually still has it on their website that their number one goal at FEMA is not just emergency management. It's actually to, make sure they have emergency management equity, as number one. So that being said, that's all throughout the government. This organization, though, that Scott Harris, our Alabama state health officer, is a part of, and by the way, if I'm not mistaken,
is leading now.
Well, he's leading. That Scott Harris himself, Alabama's state health officer, also challenged and then tried to backtrack his own challenge to the VCAP bill that we passed in Alabama that prevents transgender surgeries and treatments against minors. So that's who we're talking about. But this organization,
he said he was appalled that we passed that bill.
Yes, he did. But now this organization he's a part of has ties to George Soros's Open Society Economic Justice Program.
Right. It's funded by Soros and also the Kellogg Foundation, which is pretty well known to be, you know, a liberal organization that is trying to, you know, promote DEI and the, you know, equity and inclusion ideas, intersectionality, all of those kinds of things into every segment of government and society.
All I know is that does not represent the way the majority of Alabamians feel, and yet somehow or another, he has wormed his way into all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And to tie back to what we talked about before the break, he also said publicly that he thought that anyone who is opposed to Medicaid expansion was opposed due to latent racism.
Well, thank you for wrapping that all up with a nice, neat bow. That's
Yeah, so you're welcome on that. It's just one of those, you know, it can't be that we're concerned about, you know, funding prisons or roads or things, you know, or even schools if we combined budgets or shifted our taxation, you know, situation. It can't be that we're concerned about the way that we're doing things. It's that we're racist. And so, you know, having somebody in that role in a situation of authority, a really large authority, you know, the law was changed for his appointment, loosely. I mean, it was not a super, you know, slam dunk.
Right.
But his appointment, the way he is appointed, has been changed to where the governor has to give the stamp of, okay, yes. But this is somebody who has a lot of authority written into statute for the state of Alabama. And what's clear from this, from that racism talk about Medicaid, from his board membership on a sex education board that, you know, was promoting all of the gender issues
Hey, Steph.
To now this latest thing. He's definitely not representing our values.
Stephanie Smith, Alabama Policy Institute. We are out of time, but thank you so much, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks, Phil.
Wow. AlabamaPolicy.org has got it all. Check it out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I am talking about Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. All right, hey, listen, yesterday I was out, so we could not do our Butters and Lee segment. Today, I will be honest with you, we moved it, and however, the Butters is now out, so what do we do with this? Well, Butters has issued power of attorney to JP on his behalf. Butters is apparently taking a time for a family wedding. What are you grinning about?
Right, I was going to say I'm honored that he chose me.
You have power of attorney. You can now go do his banking for him. You can sign his tax records, pick up his medicals. It's all good. General durable power of attorney to answer for Butters. But aside from the fact that I've got right here in the studio the JP sitting in for the Butters on the line right now, I have the Lee from Huntsville. Lee, how you doing?
I am great this beautiful Friday.
It is indeed a beautiful Friday, isn't it? It's gorgeous out there right now. I already have the top off my Jeep. I'm just ready to do some post show driving, like Jeep therapy. All right, well, listen, I pronounce a quorum, JP and Lee. Hit it. All right, you guys, y'all know the deal. I ask you questions. You just give us your unvarnished opinions on where things are. So I'm going to start with Lee, ladies first. Lee, here's my first question for you. Real simple, real short. Has Kamala lost the bro vote? That's what I want to know. Your thoughts.
Yes, I think in a lot of ways she's way down with men. She is not likable, and she is extraordinarily leftist, very feminist, and I think that turns off a lot of men. She'll have the cuck men vote. She'll have the vote of the men whose wives have boyfriends. You know, she'll have that vote. And she'll have the dudes who eat too much soy and the ones who, you know, dye their hair. But, you know, in college campus, the guys who want to score, they're going to be like, yes, Kamala, all the way, you know, to make sure their girlfriends hear it. But whether or not they'll actually vote for her when they get in the thing, I don't know. But
well, what I do know, though, is I can't say that she's lost the vote of the men who wear Lululemon because JP wears Lululemons, and I can't go there. So there's that.
Don't put me in that category.
Better not even think about it.
Well, we also just found out that his cousin, my son, who's in the Army, also wears Lululemon. So what can I do with that?
Okay, Phil, I've bought my husband Lululemon. So, I mean, I don't know what to say.
I'm at a loss. All right, so you think though, that Kamala appears to have an irrecoverable loss of the bro vote, is what you're telling me?
Yes.
Okay, JP, your thoughts, dude.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to ask is, do we count the white dudes for Harris as a bro? are they in the bro category? Because if so, then maybe not. But I wouldn't put them in the bro category. So I would agree. Anybody, you know, the truly like masculine man in America, I feel majority of them are for Trump. So.
Okay, the truly masculine men.
Yeah, the bros, the real bros.
What you just said is that you and I are masculine men.
we're not tuning into the white guys for Harris meetings.
So no that. White guys for Harris, and we could care less about call her daddy. So it's
yeah,
all
exactly.
Good. All right, so but let me just throw this one kind of curve at you in the same vein. Has Trump Trump's doing Joe Rogan today? Joe Rogan, you know, Mr. Alpha Male. And it's a no-holds-barred discussion usually with him. He'll go anywhere he feels like going. He actually has a rule that your handlers can't be in the room, and you have to commit to at least an hour for a free-ranging conversation about whatever. But in that regard, Joe Rogan will have 15 million viewers on the average of one podcast, and a lot of his audience are younger males. Is Joe Rogan podcast going to wind up being like lock on the bro vote for Trump? Lee again.
Yes. And Kamala would never go on there because of those rules. She can't speak intelligently off the cuff for an hour. She'll look like an idiot, and she knows that.
Yeah, and she's also scared of Joe Rogan, I'm pretty sure. But toxically masculine. All right, so dude, what do you think? Joe Rogan, Locke, bro vote for Trump?
Yeah, I would say so. But not only just, you know, Joe Rogan, you know, the they both JD and Trump went on the Theo Von podcast, which is also a really big one amongst, you know, my demographic of younger males. And he also went on Andrew Schultz's podcast. So, you know, not just the Joe Rogan podcast, but, you know, him and JD Vance have kind of been making the rounds amongst the podcast, you know, the podcasts that are very popular amongst my demographic being, you know, younger males. So, yeah, I think that will be the cherry on top, the Joe Rogan, of all the work they've done with the other podcasts.
Okay.
So very smart on their behalf, I would say.
I would agree. I think it was very smart. I couldn't tell if they were holding off because they wanted to have it at the last minute or if Rogan had not opened the door for them to do it. I didn't know what the delay was, but either way, I had a feeling it was coming, and here we are. I agree with both of you. I think Kamala has burned the vast majority of the bro vote. And it's really a self-inflicted wound, much of it. And then at the same time, I think that the guy who got shot in the ear and then with blood on his face waved his fist in the air and yelled fight, I think that half of the American males were watching that going, yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
and what didn't help is they were trying to save the quote bro vote by sending Tim Walz out in the field with a shotgun, and I don't think that helped their cause.
No, not at all. All right, that's round one. Good, lively conversation. All right, here's my next question for you guys. So it's said that the economy and the border are the top two issues for voters, like economy and border. And they have gone back and forth. Sometimes one was number one, sometimes the other was number one. But right now, allegedly, the economy is the number one issue among voters, and border is number two. But do you agree with that order? And then next piece of that, though, is what do you think is number three or four in terms of the voters' minds? JP, you first.
I think abortion is making its way up the ranks. Obviously, it's number one on the Democrats, you know, platform. But I think because it's becoming so popular to kill babies on one side, I think on the Republican side, it's causing people to care more about to protect, you know, the life of the unborn. So I think that's probably creeped its way up, you know, to number four. But other than that, you know, I would say foreign policy is in there. Obviously, on the Republican side, it's much more important, and that side tends to be much more educated because the people on the left who are saying that Israel's committing genocide in Gaza probably can't even point to Gaza on a map.
Right.
So I think although one side is more educated on foreign policy than the other, obviously not for everybody on the left, but majority, I think that causes it to probably be around number three, I would say. So I think abortion's creeped its way up to number four, I would put it. I put foreign policy at number three.
All right. How about you, Madam Lee?
I think those two are the number one. The economy outpacing immigration. I think number three would be, I agree that foreign policy, I think this one is very subjective depending on how old you are. Foreign policy would be up there, but also safety and security of our populace, you know, what's going on with crime. Mm. You know, and issues with, and that's kind of tied to immigration somewhat. And number four, so I would say those two, maybe foreign war is number four, but that's if you talk to someone, say, above 50. Below 50 or say below 40, it's going to be leaning more towards abortion, and it makes more sense because those are the people that can get pregnant. So I think that, and they call it health care. They're going to term it as health care, which really ticks me off.
Reproductive freedom.
Yeah, nothing, exactly.
Yeah, there's nothing. Sucking your baby into a sink is not a form of health care. Dismembering a baby in the womb and pulling it out piece by piece is not health care. That is plain and simple killing something. And you're not, you know, I don't know whose health care it is, but it makes me angry. And it, you know, people don't call it what it is. They want to call it something gentle. You know, like reproductive justice or whatever that means.
But I think what you just said
they don't want to call it what it is.
I think what you just said, though, is it's kind of like what JP was saying. It's abortion from both sides of the argument have risen in the discussion. It's not just that Democrats are all about wanting to try and get back to abortion on demand. It's that the conservative right is saying we don't want it going back to the abortion on demand. Keep it at a state's rights issue and let us have our way at the state level. I would add a couple things to this list. So first of all, I agree with y'all. And on the foreign policy side, I look at that in part as being not just like Department of State kind of stuff, but like DOD, Department of Defense stuff, military. I think that the strong military, I think we have a nation right now that is hungry to know that we have peace through strength, and we question whether we do right now. And so I see that. The other one that that y'all didn't mention, but I'll lump it into a broad category, is cultural issues. Things like transgenderism and what they're doing to kids, and you know, the idea of packing the court so that you can get your way on cultural issues and agenda items. I look at that kind of cultural fight as almost being a category by itself.
Well, that ties into abortion, though, in the sense of packing the court, because they think that's how they can, get to the point where they can codify it in national law, federal law, is through packing the court. So I would kind of tie those two together. But, yeah, I mean, transgenderism is an issue. Cultural issues, it is crazy right now. But I don't know. There's just, like, how many things can you have? Maybe it makes like top seven.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, our list is growing.
People getting groceries, that's the number one thing, is can you put gas in your car? Can you feed your kids? Yeah. Can you pay your bills?
I was supporting McDonald's because of this week, right? I bought a double quarter pounder just by itself.
Sure, that's the reason.
It was, but I bought a double quarter pounder yesterday en route to Tuscaloosa to speak to a group there. And the double quarter pounder by itself with nothing else, because I had a bottle of water with me, was $7.80.
Wow.
I was like, my God.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Your final thoughts there, JP?
Part of what you mentioned in the foreign policy issue, I think a big part of it that people don't realize is how much our foreign policy directly relates to us, because when we're constantly sending money to Ukraine to provoke Russia, that ties us with Ukraine, and eventually there's going to be a breaking point. You can argue where that breaking point is, of where you and Ukraine are one pretty much, so you're in this fight too. Obviously, I don't think that point will be reached anytime soon, but that breaking point is there, and the question is, how far to that point to where we're tied into that, with Russia. That's just an example as to how important foreign policy is to keep our country safe, because if we're stupid in foreign policy, then we tie ourselves with somebody else who's in a war. We become part of that war, too. So,
yeah, I would say not just stupid, but feckless in foreign policy. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know how to negotiate. We don't negotiate from strength, all those things. Wow,
because
great discussion.
Peace through weakness doesn't work.
Yeah. How about appeasement and containment? Those are wonderful plans. I love it when we just try to appease and contain. All right. Hey, listen, that is round one. Not Butters and Lee. It's JP and Lee, because JP's got power of attorney today. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come right back for round number two. It's where we flip the script and they ask me questions. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we're doing in here. All right, so we're back for round two of what is normally called Butters and Lee, but the Butter Man is on shore leave right now, and so sitting in for him is the able JP. So this is where we flip the script. I ask them questions and see what their thoughts and responses are in round one. Round two, they ping me with questions, and I hope and pray that I've got an answer. So I will start with Madam Lee. What do you have for me?
I wanted to talk about an article from 1819 News about state health officer Scott Harris named president of the Soros-linked National Org with a focus on, quote, health equity.
Yeah.
This is one that's got a loose association with George Soros's Open Society, whatever, org. I mean, what's going on here? And why is this guy still our health officer? His calls on COVID were horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. So
what's going on here? Why can't we get rid of this guy?
We talked about this for a little bit with Stephanie Smith from API just a little while ago when she was on. But there's a few things that I didn't even get a chance to touch on, not the least of which is during COVID, I was actually on staff with the Alabama Policy Institute at the time before we started Right Side Radio. And when COVID kicked off, we were really concerned about some of the things that were happening. And so we wrangled it to where I was appointed Me personally, I was appointed to be a member of what was called the Governor's Task Force on COVID. I like to say there was never any tasking for the force, if you know what I mean. It was like we would get the email, and we would get this stupid email that would say, it would say, sequestered email, do not announce. And it would say, in 30 minutes, the governor's going to say, I'm like, what good is it for me to be on a commission where allegedly I'm going to do something to help? And you're going to just tell me stuff 30 minutes ahead of time. And then, oh, by the way, we'll get back to you when we need you. So I was one of the only ones, though, on some of the conference calls that would ask Scott Harris, like, pointed questions. And you could always tell he was like, Williams is going to ask a question again. And I would. And I never really got satisfactory answers. And he would talk. He would gloss. But he's like the Alabama Fauci. Anyway, you're right. We've also discovered that he is uber liberal, and he is now a part of this group, which is funded in part by the Soros organization. And it's all about health equity and about the LGBTQIA+, you know, agendas. And it's really kind of maddening.
Can I point out, too, that in the CHOOSE Act, the one that got approved, it says in there, basically, there's a line in there that concerned our group was that basically like the schools had to follow the direction of the state health and I believe like people who have these students that have chosen to move and take their money with them have to follow the direction of the state health officer. And I feel as if this is not a good direction to go, especially in a conservative state. Why in the world do we have this very liberal man as our health officer?
Well,
why can
I'll
we not
why.
Remove him and put someone else in?
I'll tell you why. Because
why?
He was not appointed by anybody in government, a Republican supermajority. By the way, we were all shocked. I spent 8 years in Montgomery. I didn't know who the state health officer was. Nobody cared. Well, it turns out he's appointed by the Medical Association. Who is that? That's the lobbying organization for doctors. So he's not even nominated or appointed by the governor. He serves at nobody's pleasure except his own industry. And if they're all wrapped up in their healthcare narrative and they've got their own agenda, guess what? That's who he is. And so we did get the law changed to where now the governor can get a new healthcare officer. But this guy, nobody knew the amount of power this individual had. Nobody knew that he wasn't appointed. I mean, it was put in place like in the 70s or something. It's nuts. All right, I'm gonna run out of time, Lee.
So
let me jump over and see what.
Why is he still there?
Why is he? I don't have an answer. You know why? Because Kay Ivey's governor. That's why. There's my answer. All right, JP, question for me. What do you got? How much time we got?
We got about 1 minute.
Oh,
so I'll ask you quickly. With this momentum change between Kamala to Trump that we see,
yeah.
If you could pinpoint one event you think maybe contributed the most to that during that time, whether it be the Bret Baier interview or something else along the line, what do you think contributed to that momentum shift the most?
I think that her continuing to do poorly in her own town halls. I think the fact that she has come out so strident and that there is it's not one thing, I know, but what I'm saying is there's a tone from her campaign. There's a tone from her campaign that does not promise or provide hope or provide some measure of security
or substance.
It's like the tone of her campaign is literally just leave me alone, hate Trump, leave me alone, hate Trump. And you look at it and go, you're offering nothing. And people, I think the veneer is finally off. If I had to pick an event, I really think the Bret Baier interview was one of the cascading moments. But I also still believe that the two assassination attempts on Trump were a big part of it also. All right, Lee, thank you, my friend. JP, you're still around. We got JP on sports coming up next. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, you know what we do on Fridays now. We've gotten to be a regular thing. So JP's getting a lot of airtime today because we do this thing, and you got a sound effect for it. You know you do. We like to call it JP on Sports. JP on Sports. It's a combination of sound effect and me just yelling into the microphone. We're gonna polish that up though.
Whenever I decide to sit down and actually do that,
we're gonna get it for you because this is like a recurring segment. We get a lot of feedback on this. So for those of y'all that don't know, the JP man is like a savant on sports. And he's got his own show Saturday mornings on The Ump out of Huntsville. Talk about that briefly.
From 9 to 11, we'll be breaking down the 10 games from that day. And this weekend is tomorrow. Tomorrow, Wesley Britt will be joining us as our guest picker. And we'll be doing an interview with him at 10:30. And then afterwards, he'll be our guest picker.
So Wesley Britt, husband of U.S. Senator Katie mm-hmm. Britt, himself a former All-American, played for Alabama as a
played
lineman.
Played in the NFL,
and
too.
And then went to the Patriots after that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Good get.
Yep.
All right. We do it in two segments. First segment, we call it the three and out. You give us your big three stories in sports, and then you jump into the next segment on 2 minute warning. Mm-hmm. So take it away, bud.
Well, I got to talk about this game because who would have thought that if before the season you talk about the Notre Dame Navy game, who would have thought that would be a big time ranked matchup? And it is now.
It is.
Navy is ranked 24th. And I can't remember how far Army jumped up, but last week, before this, these past rankings, it was the first time both Army and Navy were ranked in the same week since 1960.
Wow.
And now I believe Army is around 23. They may be 23 and 24 right now, actually, Army and Navy. So Navy will be going to play at Notre Dame, currently undefeated, and Notre Dame with their one loss at number 12. They really can't afford to lose another game if they want to be in the playoffs. So, but a funny storyline with this game, both Army and Navy will play Notre Dame at some point. So if they both finish out and they're both undefeated, they're going to have to play in the American Conference Championship game, and then the week after that have to play in the Army-Navy game. So if Army and Navy both finish out undefeated, we're going to have back-to-back Army-Navy games playing against each
other. No kidding?
Yeah, and it could end up deciding who gets into the playoffs, but the scenario I'm pulling for is they both finish out undefeated. One team wins the conference championship. The other team wins the Army-Navy game. So now you don't know what to do.
All right, so which one is bigger, though? I mean, you think that Army-Navy is like Auburn-Alabama. It's like a huge rivalry. But then you definitely want to go on to a bowl.
I mean,
you definitely want you want the post season stuff to happen.
Yeah, that's what I was talking to my dad about this, and I was like, "How do they not think this through?" And he was like, "Well, they were never in a conference until recently, and they never been.
That's true.
They both never been good enough to where this was a problem either at the same time. So they're gonna have to change that after this.
So someone somewhere is stroking their chin, going, "Wow,
how did we let this happen? We let this go under the radar."
All right, that's your first on the three and out. What else you got?
Well, I got to talk about the Alabama-Missouri game because now for the second time this season, Alabama will be looking to bounce back after a loss playing at home.
If y'all could see the crestfallen look on his face right now.
You know, it's a part of me. Look, I've never had to labor to watch Alabama football in my whole life, but now it's getting to a point where there's a part of me that's like,
you dread it.
Well, I dread it because even if we win, I know it's not going to be a fun experience because, you know, our wins lately have not been good to watch either. But
welcome to being an Auburn fan.
Yeah, it's new territory for me, but it's Alabama. Look, there's still a chance if Alabama wins out, they still could sneak into the playoffs at like the 10th or 11th seed or something, but they have to win out. And it starts with playing a ranked Missouri at home. I do think Missouri is highly overrated, but Missouri is also, I believe I saw, number 9th in the nation in terms of third down conversions, which has been Alabama's biggest weak spot on defense. They can't get off the field. So if Missouri can continue to convert on third down, then it could be trouble in Bryant Denny. But I still think Alabama overall is the better team. I mean, Missouri and Auburn went head-to-head, and I think Auburn is currently one of the lower-tier teams in the SEC. I feel like you would agree with that, too.
So Bama's got them at home this weekend, though.
Yes, but, you know, there are some statistics that would worry Alabama fans when you look at them, but I think overall Alabama is the better team, and there's been players this week talking about how after this loss, they've ramped up the strictness on certain stuff. Like Alabama, when Saban was there, had a strict tuck shirt rule during practices that got really lax. Apparently, that's back on. Apparently, they're being much stricter on being early to meetings, which in my head, I hear that. It's like, why didn't you just do that in the first place? But anyways, but it seems that they're shifting and trying to bring the standard back up to what it was
They're
under Saban.
Instilling personal disciplines.
Yes. So hopefully that translates and Alabama can go on a roll to finish out the season, but they still got to play at LSU before the season's over, and that's going to be hard.
All right. About 3.5, 4 minutes. What's your number three on the 3 and out?
Well, another in-state team, Auburn, will be playing Kentucky today – or, excuse me, tomorrow. Look, it's funny because there's so many stats that I see. Auburn ranks so well amongst teams that are, like, one or two lost teams, and then Auburn has two wins amongst the mix. So that, I think that tells you that Auburn, they've played well, but they just cannot find out how to win games. Like, when it gets down to the end, they cannot figure out a way to win. They had the Missouri game in their grips last week, and they let it slip out. And I think that's just been the story of the season. But they got Kentucky this week. This is a very winnable game for Auburn. You know, Kentucky is – I'm very unimpressed with Kentucky. I thought they were going to beat Florida this past week, but Florida just stomped them. So they got Kentucky coming in with their tail between their legs. This should be a game that Auburn wins. I think Auburn is the much better team than Kentucky, and you know, hopefully they can get some momentum going to finish out the season.
What are we, five consecutive losses on Auburn right now?
I believe so, actually.
I think yes. It's one of the first times we've seen five consecutive. Even in our bad seasons, we didn't have five consecutive losses.
I don't think Hugh Freeze is quite on the hot seat yet, but I've wondered myself if there's a breaking point this season of, you know, record-wise, where they're like, we can't even keep you around another season. I'm not sure. I think he has enough good recruits coming in. They'll give him at least one more season. But still not – I mean, still not a great look.
He doesn't have any real gimme games. Kentucky's a game that we should see a win. Mm-hmm. But it's not like it's a gimme season after that.
No. I haven't looked at their record at the rest of their conference schedule, but obviously the Iron Bowl in Alabama this year, they still have to play that. So – but Kentucky is a very gettable game for them, like I said. So let's see if they can turn momentum before going down the home stretch.
So let me ask you this. The old rule was you can lose every game at Auburn as long as you beat Alabama.
That's pretty much it. I mean, it's listen, the they should not have fired Gus Malzahn. I mean, they're still trying to regroup from that awful decision. But there were a lot of seasons where Auburn, you know, would go 7-5 or something, and people want Malzahn fired. He'd pull off the Iron Bowl, and he's beloved again. He's just got a contract extension, you know. So if Hugh Freeze can, you know, go into – now, the Alabama team that's playing at that point could be – there's no telling what that team is. If Alabama somehow drops a game in that time period, which they very well could, they still have to play LSU, and they're out of the playoff picture, Auburn could be playing a very down in morale Alabama. Or if they go on a roll and they went out and they're in the playoffs at that time, they could be playing a very hot Alabama. So it's hard to tell what that game is going to look like right now because you know, either team could get on a roll and could be in very different spots than they are right now.
I'm an Army fan now.
Yeah. The triple option putting up 48 points is certainly impressive, I have to say.
Well, I'm just still loving the strangeness of what you just described a moment ago with the Army Navy both like having the potential for back-to-back Army Navy games, which would be the first time in the history of ever.
Yes. and exposes a loophole that they're going to have to fix.
Exactly. All right. Listen, brother, that's good stuff. That's 3 and out, round one of JP on Sports. We're going to come right back from this break, and that's when we switch the gear. I actually get a timer out, and there's a buzzer. He has a 2-minute warning. He can do 2-minute segments on his topics of choice related to sports, and I'm pretty sure somewhere in there's a World Series discussion. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. All right, so this is round two of JP on Sports. So if you haven't already noticed, JP's pretty good on sports. He's got a lot of knowledge about a lot of stuff, about a lot of things sports. He has his own show on Saturday mornings. By the way, we said earlier it's on the up, but where is that on the dial?
103.9 FM, 7:30 a.m.
103.9 FM, 7:30 a.m. The Ump out of Huntsville, off the bench, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11. In the meantime, all right, here's the deal. 2-minute warnings. I have the timer. Go.
All right, well, first off, the World Series starts tonight between the Dodgers and the Yankees, which is the World Series I was not rooting for, just because I mean, there's on one sense it's, you know, those are the two best and most deserving teams to be in the World Series, but at the same time, it's Dodgers Yankees. I mean, it's kind of a boring World Series, but I'm excited to see Shohei Ohtani play in the World Series, Aaron Judge for the Yankees, Juan Soto for the Yankees. But there's a part of me too that wants the Yankees to win, because, you know, Freddie Freeman, who plays for the Dodgers, he was a career long Braves player. He was, like, as far as I knew when I was alive, Freddie Freeman was on the Braves, and then broke my heart when he went to the Dodgers. I actually cried when that happened. There's very few times I've cried when sports stuff has happened. That was one of them. And so he won the World Series with the Braves in 21. That's currently his only World Series ring, and I don't want him to get another with another team, you know, deep down. So I'm kind of pulling for the Yankees for that fact. But no, I mean, other than it being Dodgers Yankees and kind of a boring scenario, it is going to be exciting because these are the two best, you know, high powered teams with the best players. So it is fun in that aspect. But it would have been fun to see a hot team like the Mets, you know, a Mets Yankees World Series that would also kind of been boring.
It'd been boring, but I think it would have been a hoot for New York City. I mean, all you do is driving across town to share the fields, you know.
That would have been interesting to see, you know, who has the home field advantage, because they're both playing in the same city. I mean, even a Mets game, you're going to have plenty of Yankees fans there. But I mean, yeah, ESPN is going to get a load of the Dodgers-Yankees. I mean, I can already tell they're going to be promoting that like crazy. I mean, talk about earlier, $5,000 tickets for this game. This World Series sells itself, so.
All right, two-minute warning on that one. Let's go ahead and reset the clock. Next two-minute warning, what do you got?
So I got to talk about this controversy that happened last night in the NFL game between the Rams and the Vikings. It's been getting a lot of attention. There was a blatant missed call in the game that costed the Vikings the game in a lot of people's eyes. It was when it happened, it was 28-20, so 8-point game. The Vikings got the ball back, had time for one more drive. They're in their own end zone, and Darnold gets sacked for a safety, but his head spun literally almost to the back where he was facing behind him from a face mask of the guy grabbing his face mask and pulling it right in front of the referee, and the ref did not call the face mask that was right in front of him, and the Vikings end up getting a safety, and that's the end of the game because you kick the ball to the Rams after that. So it's been talk of Twitter all day today. I've seen a lot of people saying the NFL is rigged, NFL is scripted, this is obvious, and, you know, because the ref was sitting right in front of it and didn't call the face mask. But it's just another case of NFL referees being extremely incompetent. And it's been mind-boggling to me that with how much money the NFL has, you're the premier football organization in America, and you still have stuff like this happening that's costing teams games. It's awful.
So was he deep in his own end zone, or was he riding the line somewhere?
No, he was deep in his own end zone, running out of the pocket.
Like the ref was watching his feet to see where the line was.
No, he had just kind of entered the end zone, running to the right, scrambling, and the guy literally grabs his face mask, pulls it back as he's tackling him. His head snaps, and there's no flag, ends up costing the Vikings the game.
Wow.
So, like I said, this has been the talk of sports all day today, and there's just NFL refs have got to get better. I understand it's an extremely hard job, but, you know,
is there punishment though? Do they have a supervising board that comes back and says we're fining you, Mr. Ref, for that?
Nope. And that's part of the problem is they tend to back the refs a bit too much in those scenarios and support them. I get it; those are your, you know, employees, but at the same time, there's got to be an accountability. Like even like in college football or the SEC, when there's a missed call, the next day there's normally a statement, you know.
All right, you got two-minute warnings down. Let's reset the clock. What else you got?
Oh, it's another interesting storyline. You know, the NBA season just started, and for the first time ever, we saw father and son on the court at the same time.
LeBron and LeBronny.
LeBron James Jr. playing for the Lakers with LeBron, obviously still on the Lakers. LeBron James Jr. or Bronny was drafted by the Lakers this past season. And, you know, LeBron has always said that before he retires, he wants to play on the same court with one of his sons. So this appears to be the Lakers doing LeBron a favor because, you know, a lot of people don't think Bronny is good enough to be in the NBA right now. And it's, you know, he's probably going to struggle. And you kind of feel bad for Bronny too, because instead of developing in college and getting to the point where you're actually league ready, your dad's putting pressure on you. He's like, I want to retire soon. You come into the NBA now. And now he's kind of just ousted it, you know, into the fire already when he's probably not ready to be in the NBA yet. But nevertheless, it's still pretty cool to see, you know, a father and son playing together on the same court. It's pretty.
Didn't LeBron, the senior LeBron, didn't he go straight from high school?
He did. He went straight from high school.
He was a freak of nature, too.
Oh, I don't think the game will ever see, you know, talent like LeBron James again. Obviously, there's this new player, Victor Wembanyama, who is a specimen of his own. But in terms of at such a young age, straight out of high school, going to be league ready like that, I mean, the NBA is never going to see something like that again. So he was a special circumstance. His son, on the other hand, I think could have used a couple more years in college to develop. But still pretty cool, though. Father and son on the same team playing at the same time.
And you got in just under the wire. So there's that. Oh, well, you gave yourself the buzzer anyway. All right. We got time for one more. We have one. How much time we got?
We got about 1 minute.
All right. Let's see if you can get it 1 minute out of a 2 minute warning. Go ahead.
Well, there's a big UFC pay per view this weekend.
I'm stoked for.
I'll actually be up in Huntsville this weekend, and me and my friends make sure that we're all getting together to watch this one because it's a big time one. Max Holloway will be fighting Ilia Topuria for the 145 belt, but then also Khamzat Chimaev is making his return to fight Robert Whittaker. These names probably don't mean anything to you, but they're big in the MMA
world. Nothing at all.
So they're fighting in Abu Dhabi, which they're actually the card will be an afternoon card right before the college games. So literally, I will be sitting down on the couch watching UFC straight into college football. I will not be getting up from the couch after that for the rest of the day. You got the back-to-back of UFC and college football. But, yeah, I'm super stoked for this card. It's a big-time one, and, yeah, big one.
All right. Good enough, man. You got that under the wire, too.
We got about 20 seconds left, too.
That's outstanding. All right, so remind folks again where they can find you on Saturday mornings if they want to, besides like on the couch where you're watching USC and football.
From 9 to 11 a.m. over on the UMP Talk Radio, 103.9 FM, 7:30 a.m. Off the Bench with Kelsey and JP. Reminder, Wesley Britt will be our picker this weekend, and we'll also be doing an interview with him at 10:30, so stay tuned for that, too.
Outstanding. That's JP on sports, and JP is on sports, too, let me just tell you. All right, you guys, listen, we're coming right back. I got somebody calling in. If you're a car guy, you want to know what's going on in the Huntsville region this weekend, I'm going to be there. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I am talking about Alabama. Y'all, Alabama. I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, we're going to try and get somebody on the phone here momentarily. We're working on getting him right now, but there's an event coming up tomorrow, and I'll plug it right now, and hopefully he'll come on here shortly, and we'll get a bigger plug. The North Alabama region of the Antique Automobile Club of America is having a major car show tomorrow at the Orion Amphitheater in Huntsville. I mean, I'm a car guy. In fact, if you look at our phone number, 833-68-RIGHT, well, that's 833-MY-68-MUSTANG-RIGHT is the reason why that number is what it is. They gave me this whole litany of numbers I could choose from. And when I looked at it, I was like, I don't want that. Oh, wait, 68. It fits. And so that's why we have the number we do. But, yeah, tomorrow is the Southern Fall Nationals. This is a graded show. This is a real car show, like the kind that they take home trophies from that are awarded from a national organization. So we got all kinds of sponsors. We got a lot of things happening. I'm proud to be not only a car guy who's going to go and enjoy the show, but I'm also going to be the MC for their awards dinner that night. So if you're a car guy, car girl, if you're a car person and you love antique car, I'm talking everything, hot rods, classics, muscle cars, all of it. They have all different categories. You need to get out there tomorrow. It's at the I think the vehicles for judging are locked in by 11. In other words, you have to have your vehicle on and you have to be registered. But all said and done, The show is going to be open by mid-morning and run till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Great event. Orion Amphitheater, right there in Huntsville. Absolutely worth doing. And there's I talked to the guy we're trying to get on the phone right now. Apparently, I know for a fact he is neck deep in trying to get that the final details ready. So he may be tied up. But the reality is I talked to him this morning, and he said that they've got cars coming from, I think, 21 different states. And that's just, listen, me being a car guy, I'm all for it. Let me jump on some text messages while we try him on the phone one more time. James from St. Clair texted in at some point earlier. He says, just tried Chick-fil-A's honey pimento cheese sandwich with frozen lemonade on this pleasant sunny Friday. Slamming. Thank you, James. Appreciate it. I'm now hungry. Tim from Madison earlier in the show texted in. And gave me a biblical quote. Oh, I see. He gave me the quote that he had also given me. Tim, I'll go back and read it. It's long, but thank you very much. Appreciate that. Jamie from Hartsel says, heading to vote early in Pulaski, Tennessee, to bank my vote. Jamie from Pulaski. And by the way, we're seeing right now, y'all, that Republicans are showing up in droves for early voting. Because the word is, I mean, I think Republicans are still by and large pretty skeptical of the whole ballot harvesting thing. But I would say that the reality is, overall, we've pretty much glommed onto the idea if they're going to open up early voting and we can go do something in person, we're doing it. And so in the states that allow that, you're seeing massive Republican turnout. And they can tell because you have to go in and you check off which ballot you want. So it's going to be interesting. Scott from Somerville texted in and says, do you remember when the last time our federal government actually had an annual budget? No, I do not. It's been way too long. Isn't that amazing? They keep passing CRs, the continuing resolutions, and NDAAs. It's just, it's nuts. So Ken from Ramlap says, somebody mentioned unclaimed baggage earlier. Said, nice place to eat in Scottsboro also. Nice places to eat in Scottsboro also. Scottsboro is a beautiful town. Great town. Brian from Decatur says, we're complaining about the debt to the same politicians that are using Ukraine and other conflicts throughout the world as a major money grab for their own pockets. Brian, I'm sure some of that happens, but it is not exactly systemic. You can't be that guy who says, if you're a politician, you're corrupt. It's all about money for you, because it's not. Bo from Coleman says, hey, Phil, people also got to realize that Trump gets in office, or hope he does, it's going to take a little bit to clean this mess up that he was left with. I agree with that. It's going to have his work cut out for him. Did we get him on the line? You got him? Hey, on the line right now, working to coordinate everything it takes to put on the Antique Automobile Club of America's Rocket City Southern Fall Nationals is Dave Robertson. Dave, how you doing?
I'm great, Phil. How are you, sir?
I am good. I'm good. Are you neck deep in final details?
We are. We're getting ready to kick off our Friday night social with the band. We've got Grits and Juice playing and a big social. We'll have over 100 people here gathered to celebrate before we go to the big show tomorrow, is where everybody will be on the show field.
Well, speaking of the show field, so Orion Amphitheater is where it's at, right?
Correct. Yes, sir. It's in the south parking lot, so it's the big parking lot behind the Orion Amphitheater, where the show field will be, and Spectator Park.
Well, so how many vehicles, how many classes do you have?
We've got 139 vehicles and 55 different classes.
Wow.
With the oldest one being about 1918 up to a 1998 Pontiac Parisian.
Wow, that's very, very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to being with you guys tomorrow night. And this is a serious car show. I mean, the awards y'all are giving out, people are traveling from all kinds of states to get there, right?
Yes, sir. We've got them coming in from 21 different states. We've got some people bringing them in car haulers and on trailers, and some people are driving.
Well,
but they're all antiques, and they're all factory correct as part of the Antique Auto Club of America. They try to stay true to factory correct or as it was delivered off the dealer's floor. So
it's not a Restomod show. This is going to be something that shows a factory correct vehicle when you get it done.
Yes, sir. They're beautiful. And of course, they're going for different levels of awards. From the first time award, we have some here that are going for their fifth award, a repeat preservation award.
Well, how does the Antique Automobile Club of America? I mean, I know this is a national organization, one of the premier organizations, really. How do they do this? This is a regional show. Do they like step up? If you win the regionals, you can go up to the nationals?
I wish, but no. Basically, we have different regions and chapters around the country, including in foreign countries. Puerto Rico just put on a national show last year. So our region, the North Alabama region, decided to step up and host a national. Normally, we just host a local car show, but this year it's a national where we're bringing in all these people from everywhere. So it's something that our region took on that we wanted to do. We haven't done a national here in Huntsville since the early 80s, so it's been about 40 years.
The city has changed a lot since then, and I think the city has also got so much to offer. So I'm betting that there's going to be some tourist dollars coming into the town because of this.
Yes, sir. We've got hotels and we've got tours. The Space and Rocket Center been happening last couple days. So a lot of different activities. People are out shopping in antique stores, I hear. So lots of fun and activity.
Well, so for the general public, those who are not actually, maybe they're car lovers, but they're not bringing their own vehicle, they just want to come check things out. What's the schedule of events they can participate in?
The show field will open around 10 o'clock tomorrow. All the cars will be in place, and they'll be in place till about 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. You have vendors on site, too? Are there people setting up booths?
We've got 5 food trucks out here for food and entertainment. We've got a DJ playing music all day long. So, and at the same time, we've got some of the people in the area may know about Green Power. That's the elementary, middle school, and high school electric car race program. We will have 22 elementary school teams here racing electric cars about 2 blocks from the show field. At the same time, starting at 11 o'clock tomorrow.
Well, you got the perfect weather for it, too. It looks like it's going to be an amazing weekend for this. Something like 81 degrees and sunny. Am I right?
Yes, sir. It's been perfect so far all week.
Well, Dave, look, I can't wait to be out there with you. I'm a car guy from way back, although I'm without a classic right now. So hopefully I can cure that one day. In the meantime, I look forward to just living vicariously through all of y'all.
Well, you coming to this show, you may get the bug really bad.
So. I'm bringing my wife, and she may have something to say about it, but we'll see what happens.
She may get the bug, and maybe not you.
She might.
She may see something that she falls in love with, but they're from, like I said, all eras. We'll have them out here, so they're going to be beautiful.
All right, Dave Robertson, AACA Southern Nationals tomorrow at the Orion Amphitheater. Folks can start.
And
by the way,
Spectator admission is free.
Okay, outstanding. Dave, thanks so much. Appreciate you calling in.
Well, thank you, sir, and we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow. All right, listen, that's just cool. And by the way, you couldn't ask for a better weekend for this. So, I mean, you got great sports opportunities. You got any number of things you can do in the outdoors. And tomorrow you've also got a major car show if you're a car guy. So head on out there and enjoy the day. All right. JP, take me to a break, my brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back from that. I'll wrap up some text messages and get you guys into a weekend. Phil Williams, it's go home time on a Friday. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. Hey, Jeff Rowe from Indiana's on the line. Jeff Rowe, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing real good. Just learned a while ago I was going to be off all next week.
You learned a lot. You're going to be what?
I'm going to be off work all next week.
Oh, you're going to be off all next week. Is that a good thing or for all the wrong reasons?
Well, in this wonderful economy we got and everything, I haul to the biggest metal foundry in the United States.
Okay.
And they're cutting back, and they're only needing half as much. They're only going to run half as much next week as what they normally run.
Wow.
So they said, well, take a vacation. Wow. I said, okay, you ain't going to hurt my feelings any. So,
well,
as
long as that doesn't mean take a vacation, and we'll see you when we feel like it.
No, I'm. And they're going to take a week off at Thanksgiving and 2 weeks at Christmas, and that's usually more than they ever do. So.
Wow.
So, yeah, this economy is not in there. And like I say, this is a metal foundry that, makes John Deere parts, makes Toyota parts, makes Ford parts. There's over about 1,000 people that work there. So
wow.
It's the largest one in the United States.
And they're feeling the pinch right now. But everything's better. The economy's good. Don't you know that?
Well, you know, you talk about the stock market and everything. People don't realize, you know, from the Trump economy to now, you need to take into play how much inflation there's been since that time. So your dollar is buying less.
So your
stocks are basically worth less than they was probably in the Trump economy because the dollar's worth less. And if we keep going down the path we're going, the dollar's going to be worth less.
Yeah, so. That's exactly right. Yeah, well, okay. Well, nonetheless, I am happy you get some time off with go away, never come back kind of time off. That's good. All right. Good enough.
I've got a million things to do next week. I'm gonna go looking for a diesel pusher motorhome, actually. So
a diesel pusher motorhome. All right. Good. Well,
been wanting one for a while, so I'm gonna go look for one.
Well,
a good time to go.
Well, you know, there's plenty of things happening down here. You could always come down to the car show I was talking about a minute ago.
Yeah, if it wasn't so darn far away, I would.
You get off the road. You don't want to get on the road just because you're off the road, right?
Yeah, maybe I'll get a motorhome. I can go camping in your backyard sometime.
Come on.
There you go.
All right, brother. Well, listen, enjoy your time off. Call in anyway because we can't go a week without you.
Oh, I know. You'd be lost without me, huh?
All right. We'll see you, Jeff.
See you, bud. Have a good time tomorrow.
You too, man. Thank you. Let me get some text messages. I got several here. I'm not sure what. David from Hoax Bluff says, "Hey Phil, this is my Tuesday." Oh, so Tuesday. That's what he's saying. So he's like, he works through the weekend. So he's telling me that this is like his Tuesday, which I call it Friday. So now it's Tuesday to him. Okay, good enough. Thank you, David. Lee from Huntsville just checked in. Says, "Tell JP sorry I filibustered." Would you only have like a minute for that last question you did?
It sufficed. It was good.
It was good. John from Huntsville checks in. Grades are in. Are we ready for this? JP gets an A- for his just okay performance.
Wow. That's probably just because of my Lululemon.
With the Lululemon thing.
Yeah.
However, today's winner is obviously the magnificent Phil Williams. I'm magnificent today. This is amazing. With an A++. Congratulations. And enjoy that car show. JP, number 17, Boise State or UNLV. See, now he wants to call you down and then ask for your input.
Yeah, maybe if I give him a good pick here, he'll bump my grade up for next time. But I got Boise State. Ashton Jeanty is going to keep having one of the greatest seasons a running back's ever had. So give me Boise State.
You know, the story that you didn't bring up that I had hoped you would was the one that I sent you about Kennesaw State.
Oh, yeah.
Kennesaw State beating Liberty. Tell it.
That Kennesaw State, the 28-point underdog, beats Liberty, gives them their first regular season loss in two seasons.
And it was also Kennesaw State's first regular season win.
First regular season win somewhere, yeah. It's that right there sums up the new era of college football, of the bad teams can beat the good teams any day of the week still.
Wow. That's crazy. Brian from Huntsville says, JP, I have to admit that my Vols taking down the goalpost was tacky. With NIL and Portal, we could have bought three good players between the cost and the NCAA finals.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they upset, Tennessee was number 11, Alabama was 7. That's not a, you know, once-in-a-lifetime upset. I mean, I get it's a fun win, but, you know, is it goalpost taking out of the stadium worthy? I don't think so. You know, Vanderbilt taking it down Broadway is that's worth it, you know, beating Alabama. But Tennessee, come on.
Took it down Broadway and threw it in the river.
Yep.
which what was funny to me was they took it down Broadway, threw it in the river. The police went right in and recovered it. Like, that all seems very anticlimactic when the police are like, hey, it's in the water. Okay, haul it back out.
The one from Tennessee when they beat Alabama in 22, you can still see it sitting in the river from the satellite cams still.
Can you really?
If it's a clear day on the river, there's been screenshots. You can see it faintly sitting at the bottom.
Butch from Athens checked in. He says, post 5 November, that's election day, the nation will be in a leadership tumult. U.S. now has weak leadership that will become lame duck added to it. Current military leaders are pretty much more politically oriented, similar to post-Vietnam. Flag-ranked military was more political. How quickly would this lame administration / military surrender if a serious action was taken against the U.S.? So I do not think they would surrender, but I think they would stall, delay, or make some bad decisions. But I do not imagine that we would up and surrender. But Butch... More to come on this. And I'll tell you what, somebody asked me the other day, Phil, what do you think about the Democrats? What are they going to do when Trump wins? Right now, all indications are that Trump will win. The momentum is in his favor. But you look at it and go, all right, what are the Dems going to do? Because if you remember, there were outbreaks of protest in the 2016s. And there was weeping and gnashing of teeth, and there was election denying too, oh, by the way. My anticipation is that there's going to be not a lot of burning down of buildings. I don't think we're going to see BLM-style riots kicking in en masse. I do think there will be some pockets of Antifa and a few things happening, but I don't think it's going to be endemic or widespread. What I am deeply concerned about, though, and what I think y'all need to be praying about, is Donald Trump's safety. Because the rhetoric that we're seeing right now from the left, to include Kamala Harris, who was willing to go, not just willing, who just literally went to the podium in front of the Naval Observatory, the home of the VP, with the flag of the Office of Vice President behind her, making an official declaration that Donald Trump is a fascist and comparing him to Hitler, that's unreal. And that kind of thing, that kind of rhetoric has to go away. So I'm saying pray for Donald Trump's safety. That's one of my primary concerns. All right, you guys, listen, it is Friday. Have an amazing weekend. And do not forget, oh, by the way, there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.